Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From USA Today, how to keep deer, rabbits, squirrels, and moles out of your dang garden by Chris McCown. We are officially into the summer season, and as we enter this season, everything in your yard should be looking good right now. We've had somewhat excessive but very timely rainfall throughout the spring. At times, this has been frustrating but very beneficial. Experienced gardeners know that it's only a matter of time before those great conditions go away. We know weather trends are all about averages. If we experience above average rainfall at some point, we will have some level of drought. The same goes for the below average temperatures. With all of the rainfall, trees and shrubs have made substantial new growth. If you typically ignore these plants in the summer, you should probably consider providing them with water to help sustain all the season's growth when we enter a dry spell. Here are some animals to look out for this season. They will eat your plants or dig holes in your yard. Deer. All of this lush growth on our plants is also very appealing to the wildlife in the neighborhood. The biggest eaters, as related to both physical size and appetite, would be deer. They can nibble on trees and shrubs, and you might not notice. It's a different story when they find your annuals and perennials. You want to make sure you're using a repellent to keep them away. There are many to choose from. I am frequently asked which is the best. Deer scram, liquid fence, and milorganite fertilizer are some of the most recommended deer repellents. They're all very effective. To get the best results throughout the season, you should use more than one. You should alternate or rotate so you mix up the smells. If you only use one, the deer will get used to the smell and return to your plants. Rabbits, squirrels, and voles. There are other critters that also cause problems, including rabbits, squirrels, and voles. Rabbits are feeders, the rest are diggers, which can be very frustrating. Fertilome has a new product this year called CritterGo. It's a spray that you apply directly to your plants. The scent works as a repellent. Since it is applied to the plants, it also ruins the taste of the plants for the feeders. It is listed to work for rabbits, squirrels, groundhogs, voles, deer, chipmunks, elk, and moose. No need to worry about those last two. Chipmunks. What I feel are the biggest troublemakers are the chipmunks. I have had problems and challenges with chipmunks for years. Like all new products, I gave this CritterGo a try. This is the first product I've ever used that worked for chipmunks. I sprayed it in the area and tunnels where they had been digging. Moles. There is one major nuisance that you should start to see less of. This is the mole. The mole population increased substantially in some areas over the last several years because of the two broods of cicadas. It's going to be several years before the next cicada brood becomes a major food source for moles again. Now, many of the existing moles will starve, and the survivors will not reproduce as quickly as they do when they are well fed. You are likely to see less mole activity in your yard in the upcoming seasons. The population is still heavy for now. If you have moles, there are castor oil-based repellents you can use. These are always temporary. The moles will return if not regularly applied. The most effective way to eliminate the moles is to trap them. We have a great local resource for trapping information. This is the Mole Man, Tom Schmidt. His website provides excellent information. If you do not want to do the trapping yourself, he provides the service. I've used his services, and he catches them every time. You can find all this information on his website, www.themoleman.com. From BetterHomesAndGardens.com, 10 must-try garden projects to embrace a Martha Stewart summer. This approach is all about hands in the dirt, herbs on the windowsill, and birds at the feeder, by Lauren Tomlin. It's growing season, so it makes sense a garden core would enjoy a moment in the sun. While the cottage core aesthetic promotes a similar mindset, this garden-based lifestyle trades curated details for something more grounded and homegrown. Think less lace and more chickens in the yard. And who better to look for inspiration than Martha Stewart? If you've ever scrolled through her gardening content and thought, I want that life, this is your starting point. No grand estate required. From do-it-yourself harvest baskets to herbal teas, These 10 simple, satisfying garden core activities can make your days feel more intentional and connected to nature. First, cut garden-grown flowers for a bouquet. If you're growing your own blooms or just grabbing a few bunches from Trader Joe's, using those stems for a bouquet is one of the most satisfying and easy ways to bring a little garden core magic indoors. You don't need a formal background and floral arranging. Just experiment with height, color, and texture. Have fun piecing together loose seasonal arrangements in mason jars or vintage pitchers. Add herbs like rosemary or mint for a bonus fragrance and to incorporate more of your garden. Second, press flower cuttings into art. Joanna Gaines has taken after Martha Stewart lately with this hobby, dedicating an entire section at the silos to flower pressing. It's a slow, meaningful way to preserve your garden's beauty for years to come. All you need is a heavy book, parchment paper, and a little patience. Once dried and flat, your pressed flowers can be used in homemade cards, framed botanical art, or even candles and soaps. Third, make a harvesting basket or tote. Skip the mass-produced baskets and make your own harvesting tote or trug with natural materials. A repurposed wooden crate can serve as your base, but if you're feeling ambitious, you can try your hand at simple basket weaving using pliable branches or reeds. Line whatever you make with burlap or linen to make it breathable. Not only is a homemade basket cute, it's useful for gathering herbs, flowers, or veggies straight from your garden beds. Fourth, tend to a chicken coop. Even a small flock of hens can bring a huge amount of enjoyment and fresh eggs to your homestead life. Just make sure you adjust your expectations accordingly and learn about everything that comes with a coop before you make the investment. Tending to chickens means daily routines, feeding, watering, checking for eggs, and keeping the coop clean. Of all garden core activities on this list, it's likely the best time commitment, but one that pays off in a major way. Number 5, make farm-to-fork recipes. The most Martha move of all? Turning your garden harvest into a meal made with love. Whether you're slicing up homegrown tomatoes for a caprese salad or baking zucchini muffins, cooking with what you grow or buy locally makes your dish feel like something you cultivated, not just cooked. Start small with herbs or seasonal produce and work your way toward full dishes as your garden grows. Number 6, host a garden party. Garden core isn't just about solitary time with the soil, though that's a main perk. It's also about creating moments to enjoy what you've grown with others. A garden party doesn't have to be formal. String up some lights, lay out a few quilts, and let your fresh flowers and summer recipes do the rest. Think iced herbal teas, tomato tarts, and wildflower arrangements for centerpieces. 7. Set up a bird feeder or bath. Channel your inner naturalist and make your garden a haven for wildlife. A simple bird feeder or bath can bring life and movement to your outdoor space and help local bird populations thrive. If you're feeling creative, make your own with natural wood or upcycled materials and place them near shrubs or trees where birds can cool down and perch safely. To keep squirrels from taking over, try spicy seed mixes or placing feeders at least 10 feet from any launch point. Number 8, craft with herbs. If your herb garden is overflowing, there's so much more you can do with your clippings than just cook. Try drying your herbs and turning them into bath salts, herbal candles, or even natural cleaning products. Lavender and rosemary make a great combo for linen sprays or a homemade scrub. These little herb-based projects make thoughtful handmade gifts, too. Number 9, make an herbal tea or herb butter. While we're talking about herbs, don't discount all the simple ways you can add them to meals and drinks. Steep fresh herbs like mint, lemon balm, or chamomile for a relaxing tea, or whip up a soft herb butter with parsley, chives, and thyme to spread on warm bread. These herb recipes don't require much effort, but they go way beyond topping your tacos with cilantro. Finally, number 10 on the list of must-try garden projects, do-it-yourself a compost bin. It's not the most glamorous project, but managing a compost bin for all your garden and food scraps is absolutely Martha approved. Composting reduces waste, enriches your soil, and helps your plants thrive. Whether you build a simple compost bin from wooden pallets or invest in a small tumbler for your patio, composting gives back season after season. Check with your town first, because many now offer composting programs with bins and drop-off services that make getting started even easier. Also from BetterHomesAndGardens.com, 5 farmers market etiquette mistakes you might not know you're making. Make your next market trip smoother with these expert-backed tips that both you and the vendors will appreciate, by Sophia Beams. It's summer, which means it's the official season for farmers markets. Most local markets will run from early summer to early fall, giving you ample opportunity to sample the best local produce, honey, flowers, and artisan crafts from independent farmers and small businesses alike. However, a farmer's market is quite different from your local grocery store. You're most likely interacting with the people who grow, source, or make their own goods. This means you need to know all the right etiquette for respecting them, their booths, and their products. And we'll read on here to learn the mistakes you might be making at the market and what to do instead. And there's an expert here. Joe Hayes is a world-leading etiquette expert and the founder of etiquetteexpert.org. 5 Farmers Market Etiquette Mistakes. We spoke to etiquette expert Joe Hayes to learn the correct way to shop at a farmer's market, uncover the top 5 mistakes shoppers often make at the farmer's market, and get Hayes' expert tips for doing better next time. First, not greeting each vendor properly. Hayes always recommends exchanging a simple and polite greeting when entering a vendor's stall. She notes that most vendors will greet you as you enter, giving you the perfect opportunity to greet them in return. Vendors might also give you more information about their products when you enter their booth. Acknowledge this and feel free to ask any questions you might have. Shoppers need not feel pressure to make small talk with the vendor as they're browsing. Some people enjoy this while others don't. Go with what you're comfortable with, says Hayes. Either way, a simple hello goes further than you might think. Second, not acknowledging the vendor when you don't buy. A farmer's market is a delightful opportunity to check out all the different items booths have to offer, but you might not want to buy something from every stall you enter. However, you shouldn't just exit a farmer's market booth without saying anything. Hayes notes that it's customary for vendors to greet you as you enter their stall, which means that you should bid them farewell when you decide to make your exit, even if you haven't bought anything. As you're making your way out, make eye contact with the vendor, extend your arm if you need to get their attention, smile, and offer a simple thank you, Hayes says. Third, bargaining too much. We asked Hayes if it's acceptable to haggle a price at a farmer's market, and if so, how exactly do you do it without offending anyone? The answer depends on a range of factors, and it requires intuition, good sense, and good manners. The times when Hayes lists might be more acceptable to haggle include when buying in bulk, and also at the end of the day when most sellers are looking to get rid of excess product. Sellers usually drop their prices at this time to help move remaining stock, Hayes says. Vendors offering sales on products that won't last, like fresh flowers or produce, could be a potential starting point for bargaining, as long as you offer a fair price. The key, Hayes says, is to be completely polite and respectful at all times. If a seller rejects your bargain, accept their answer. Don't try to continue pushing it. Farmers markets are meant to be a friendly, safe, relaxing place where sellers get a fair price for their products and shoppers get quality produce at a fair price. The aim is to be a win-win situation for all, she says. Remember, you're supporting local small businesses by purchasing products at their listed prices, so always keep that in mind before you try to bargain. Number 4, not asking before picking something up. When it comes to produce, Hayes says that it's okay to touch, as you'll need to examine the produce before you buy it. Most of us like to pick up and check out our apples and pears, for example, for no bruises or rotten spots before purchasing, Hayes says. However, if you're not confident that you're going to buy something from a produce stall, refrain from touching any of it. Above all, Hayes emphasizes the importance of simply asking the vendor if you're unsure whether it's okay to touch something. Vendors will appreciate that you ask them before examining the products in the stalls. Most vendors will be happy to let you take a closer look once you've asked, and if not, they will be able to help you examine it themselves. Clear communication prevents a huge amount of miscommunication, she says. Number 5, taking pictures without permission. Hayes says no matter what, should always ask before taking any pictures of items in a stall. Many crafters and artisans at markets prefer to have their items go unphotographed as it allows them to keep their designs private. In some cases, vendors might appreciate and allow photos. Always specify exactly what you plan to do with the pictures when you ask. Some vendors could want you to keep their photos private, while others will appreciate them being shared. Vendors are normally more than willing to say yes, hello, free publicity, Hayes says. If you do end up posting a picture of a vendor's work on social media with their permission, always credit them and tag them when possible. If a vendor asks you not to take pictures, put your phone or camera away and continue browsing as normal. Also from BetterHomesAndGardens.com, here's why your homegrown carrots are turning out too thin and 8 tips to fix it. Get to the root of the issue so you can grow a robust carrot harvest by Lauren Landers. Carrots, being a root vegetable, are unpredictable. You never quite know what they look like until you dig them up. Sometimes the carrots you pull are disappointing, thin, almost thread-like, or otherwise unimpressive. Thankfully, there are several ways to improve your harvest. From spacing issues to improper watering, here are some of the most common causes of thin carrot roots and simple solutions for growing bigger carrots. First of all, what causes thin carrot roots? Carrots range in size from petite 2-inch-long mini carrots that are ideal for container growing to large storage carrots that stretch over 12 inches in length. No matter the variety, carrots should generally be at least 3/4 inch in diameter when you harvest them. If your carrot roots are thinner than the standard, some of the most likely causes include harvesting too early, temperature stress, improper watering, nutrient-poor soil, and overcrowding. How to grow bigger carrots? Thin carrot roots may get bigger if you give them more time to grow or correct the issues that are causing them to stay small. But sometimes the best solution is to pull up undersized harvests and start fresh with a new batch of seeds. Whether carrots are growing in your garden already or you're just about to plant fresh carrot seed and want to harvest tasty plump roots, here's how to ensure you grow big and healthy carrots every time. Plant at the right time. The best time to plant carrots is in spring, as soon as the soil is workable, or in late summer for an autumn harvest. Carrots grow best when temperatures range between 55 and 75 degrees Fahrenheit and can be succession planted every 2 to 3 weeks through spring. Stop planting new crops of carrots during the peak of summer, as temperature stress causes carrots to develop undersized roots. Provide plenty of sun. Compared to most other garden crops, carrots are relatively flexible about their lighting needs and grow in either full or part sun locations. Just make sure your plants receive at least 6 hours of direct sun per day. 6 to 8 hours is ideal. Less than 6 hours of sunlight causes carrots to grow more slowly and develop thinner roots. Enrich the soil. Carrots grow best in rich, loose, and well-draining soil with a fair amount of sand and slightly acidic pH. Testing your soil and amending the soil with a few inches of compost before planting carrot seeds will help carrots grow better and produce larger roots. If you're dealing with rocky, dense, or heavy clay soil, loosen and amend the soil with compost to a depth of 12 inches or grow carrots in 12-inch deep raised beds or pots filled with rich, loose soil or potting mix. Follow spacing guidelines. One of the most common reasons why carrots develop thin roots is that they were planted too closely together and don't have the space or nutrients they need to thrive. To avoid this, plant carrot seeds 1/4 inch deep in rows spaced about 12 to 18 inches apart. Once the carrots sprout and their tops are 1 to 2 inches high, thin out the weakest seedlings with scissors so that the remaining plants are spaced 3 inches apart. And a tip, because carrot seeds are tiny, which makes proper spacing challenging, seed companies also sell pelleted carrots. While they cost more than ordinary seeds, you can sow them more precisely so you need fewer seeds and less thinning out later. Fertilize right. Amending the soil with compost before planting carrots will help fuel the growth of your crops. But carrots will typically grow bigger and better if you also fertilize them regularly, starting about 2 to 3 weeks after the carrot tops emerge from the soil. When you fertilize, use a balanced 10-10-10 or low nitrogen fertilizer. Too much nitrogen causes carrots to grow lots of tops and thinner roots. Water well. Carrots need about 1 inch of water per week to grow well. Drip irrigation systems and soaker hoses tend to be the best way to water carrots, as these systems direct water straight into the soil and encourage carrot roots to grow deeper and bigger. Adding a loose mulch, like straw, around your plants insulates the soil from heat and evaporation and keeps carrots from becoming water-stressed and less productive. Remove weeds. Planting carrots too closely together leads to plant competition and reduces the size of carrot roots. But weeds can also compete with carrots for space, nutrients, and moisture, and cause carrot roots to thin. That's why it's important to stay on top of weeding and to remove weeds before they crowd out or overshadow your carrots. Know when to harvest. Most carrots are harvested about 50 to 75 days after planting. Check your seed packets carefully, as harvesting timelines can vary depending on the cultivar. In general, carrots should be harvested when the tops of the roots or shoulders are at least 3/4 of an inch in diameter. If you've pulled up a test carrot and it's thinner than you like, it may be a sign that your carrots aren't quite ready to harvest and they need a little more time to grow. And if you're looking for something to do, Desert Botanical Garden has flashlight nights. Tonight, August 2nd, 9th, 16th, the 23rd, and 30th, and then September 6th and the 13th. Time 7 to 9:30 p.m., price included in membership or general admission. Beat the heat and experience the magic of the garden after dark. Wander through the garden's trails by flashlight. Come face to face with fascinating desert creatures and soak in the enchanting nighttime vibes. Discover a whole new side of the garden and make it a night to remember with family and friends. Please bring a refillable water bottle and a flashlight to enjoy this experience. Ideally, 90 minutes is needed to enjoy all the activities at Flashlight Nights. Food and beverage, s'mores, breezy pops, and packaged snacks available during Flashlight Nights. Or grab a bite to eat before you explore the garden with fresh sandwiches, salads, snacks, and more from Atlanta Catering, open until 7 p.m. Now tonight, Critter Crawl. Get ready for a fun-filled evening at the garden's first ever Critter Crawl, a nighttime adventure packed with desert creatures, hands-on activities, and surprises around every corner. Head to the pond to spot frogs and toads on the move. Meet our desert spiders and discover how their behaviors help them thrive at night. Say hello to friendly snakes and learn how they fit into the desert ecosystem. Explore the world of critters that fly, from those you'll see before sunset to the mysterious ones that come out after dark. Plus, the Great Arizona Puppet Theater is back with Old McDonald's Ranch, a fun twist on the classic show where desert animals take the spotlight instead of barnyard friends. Perfect for families, curious kids, and adventurous young adults, Critter Crawl is your chance to experience the desert like never before. It's a fun, hands-on night, perfect for curious minds of all ages. Don't forget your flashlight and your sense of wonder. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories from the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called Say It with a Rhododendron, written by Martine Caselli. And there's a quote here from Ann Landers. All married couples should learn the art of battle as they should learn the art of making love. Say it with a rhododendron. I read somewhere that starting a new job is one of life's most stressful events. So when my husband began behaving in a less than charming manner after he'd moved to a new workplace, I tried to remember that the source of his tension was probably elsewhere. I tried to hunker down and weather the unpleasantness until it ran its course. I failed. Eventually, one night at bedtime, he asked me if I was angry. We began to hash it out. Tell me, would you behave toward the people at work the way you've been acting toward me lately? I asked. It's funny you say that, he answered. Lately I've been thinking that they're a lot easier to deal with than you are. Well, maybe that's because your biggest criticism at work is only, I think this paragraph needs revision, instead of, I'm completely disappointed in everything about you. My voice broke. We continued trading accusations the way tired people at night should never do. Finally, we went to bed saddened and exhausted, with nothing resolved. The next morning, we both acted carefully cordial. Our argument had succeeded in airing our tensions, only to have them hover oppressively all around us. It was a relief when the afternoon came and I got a chance to be alone. My husband was driving our daughter to a birthday party. It was far enough away that he was planning to wait there until it was over. I gloomed around by myself for the next few hours. If being angry was bad, this uneasy peace was even worse. I dreaded his return and the resumption of our polite détente. Finally came the sound of the car in the driveway, and then my husband stuck her head in the door and announced gleefully, "Daddy's got something for you." It is a historical element of our relationship, harking back to our courtship days. My husband will bring me flowers after his most dire offenses, even if he's not clear just what his offenses were. Yes, maybe it's a little trite, the typical way a male seeks forgiveness, but there it is. In times of romantic uncertainty, he is a man with a bouquet. But this time, he didn't bring just flowers. No, he struggled through the doorway with a large, bald, and burlapped rhododendron in full bloom. I couldn't help feeling a growing sense of amusement. "I went with a shrub," he said, with twinkling eyes. I thought repeated flowering might be wise in the long run, considering how difficult I can be to live with. And then he added, "I hope you know I love you." The hug that followed was warm and healing. I felt his embrace and, more important, felt the ease between his return. The next day we gave the rhododendron a careful planting out in the garden, tucking it into peat moss and compost. It has thrived, and when in bloom, inspires many a knowing smile between my husband and myself. It is our special rhododendron, a fitting symbol of the romance between a gardener and her mate. Both the flowers and our love grow more beautiful as each year passes. Did I say that flowers are trite? Well, maybe it's my turn to be wrong. That's called Say It with a Rhododendron, written by Martine Caselli, one of the many stories they make up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy. And we'll be talking with you soon.